800-500-5266. Again, you can charge your membership. You can put it on a credit card or a debit card. You could do it monthly, just $5, $6, $7 a month. Whatever you can afford, we would love to have your participation here at KBOO today. 877-500-5266. Online, you can contribute at kboo.fm or by phone, 877-500-5266.
And you are tuned to KBOO in Portland. Coming right up is the OMO Variety Hour, the Walmart working class socialism from below and remembering Paul Robeson, senior and junior. At 10:15 on Locus Focus, host Barbara Bernstein interviews writer Elizabeth Colbert, whose new book, The Sixth Extinction, An Unnatural History. At 11 on Health Watch, host David Naiman speaks with best-selling author and renowned herbalist Rosemary Gladstar about 21 herbs proven to be effective at soothing and even preventing stress symptoms. And at 11:30 on Madness Radio, B. Nev Jones, psychiatric anthropology researcher, discusses how people diagnosed with schizophrenia who hear voices and experience psychosis can help to change the way we understand and respond to these experiences. And now, stay tuned for the OMO Variety Hour.
Lord, I wish I was a mole in the ground. I wish I was a mole in the ground. I was a mole in the ground, Lord, I root this mountain down. Lord, I wish I was a mole in the ground. I wish I was a mole in the ground. I wish I was a mole in the ground.
You were tuned to KBOO Portland and listening to the Old Mole Variety Hour. I'm your host, Joe Clement. Kate Welch is our engineer today. The Old Mole is a collective labor that every Monday morning brings you interviews, book and film reviews, thoughtful music, and our own kind of commentary, the well-read red. We aim to agitate, educate, and inoculate you to what's wrong with the world, but also advocate visions of radically democratic power creating real change and sustainable institutions. What we do is but an arm in the community colossus that is KBOO, though. During today's show, we'll be hearing from Ani Haynes about how you can become a part of what we do. We'll be telling you about books that you can also get through your KBOO membership. On today's show, Fran Michelle reads from an article by Joanna Brenner on 21st century socialist feminism. It's from the magazine Solidarity, and Joanna will be speaking this Wednesday at Portland State University. We'll talk more about that later. Bill Resnick talks with Arun Gupta about the Walmart working class, an article he wrote for the Socialist Register. I'll be sharing excerpts from an article that defends democratic socialism from below against the would-be left Thatcherism of Slavoj Žižek. And finally, Laurie Mercier remembers the lives of two Paul Robesons, the famous communist singer and his son who recently passed away. But now we turn to Fran Michelle on 21st century socialist feminism.
The Old Mole Variety Hour is a program of socialist feminist analysis. And for a fuller description of socialist feminism, the well-read red turns this morning to recent writing by Joanna Brenner, who will be speaking at Portland State University this Wednesday evening. I draw today from a recent essay in the Solidarity webzine. In the 21st century, women of the working classes, employed in the formal economy, the informal economy, working in the countryside, or doing unwaged labor, have entered the global political stage in an astonishing array of movements. Sparked by the capitalist war on the working class, the enclosures sweeping peasants and farmers off the land or devastating their livelihoods upon it, and the consequent crisis and intensification in patriarchal relations, these movements are creatively developing socialist feminist politics with much to offer the left as it gropes toward new organizational forms and organizing strategies. In the global South, as women find themselves displaced, employed in precarious work, heading households, struggling to survive in informal settlements and urban slums, they are not only crucial participants in movements for 21st century socialism, they are also building grassroots organizing projects that challenge patriarchal forms of organizing, leadership, and movement demands. In the global North, these projects have engaged new modes of worker organizing that rely on mobilizing members and building community alliances. While never perfect, of course, these different socialist feminist projects in North and South, in community and workplace, at their best, offer new discourses of gender equality, new modes of organizing, and visions of participatory democracy. The 21st century has also seen an expansion and deepening of transnational feminist networks. There are, of course, class tensions within these networks, and some networks deal with these tensions better than others. Still, the networks are crucial resources for socialist feminist organizing, for it is through them that feminist discourses circulate globally, are incorporated locally, and often creatively reshaped in the process. We can think of socialist feminism very broadly, to include all feminists, whether or not they would identify with the label, who see class as central but would not reduce relations of power and privilege organized around particular identities, gender, sexuality, race, ethnicity, nationality, to class oppression. Revolutionary socialist feminism is unwilling to allow capitalism to set the horizon for what can be envisioned or struggled for. Socialist feminists start where most feminists begin. The emancipation of women must come from women ourselves, but cannot be achieved by ourselves. From this starting point, socialist feminists are especially interested in building inclusive movements organized by and for working class, indigenous, and rural women. Women's self-organization can be parochial or coalitional. That is, it can either reproduce existing social divisions among women or reach beyond them. The political vision through which socialist feminists organize aims to develop activism and leadership, education and awareness, demands and discourses, and an everyday politics that recognizes and works to overcome these deep divisions. In this process, socialist feminists look to developing a both-and politics that bridges what might be won in the here and now to a longer-term project of social transformation. Although the strength and reach of public services varies widely across countries, everywhere the trend is toward the privatization and informalizing of caring for young children, the elderly, the disabled, and the ill. This is the prominent face of neoliberal structural adjustment in the global north. It has created a demand for immigrant labor, shifting the gender of migrants from predominantly male to predominantly female. Women workers in the care sector span a wide range in terms of class, from trained early education teachers and managers of daycare centers to the child care workers, teachers' aides, house cleaners, nannies, home care workers, nursing home attendants, and others whose skills are unrecognized and low paid. Citizenship status and racial ethnic identity are mapped onto these differences as well. If we expand our view of caring labor to include hospitals and public schools, we see that women workers and their unions are increasingly under the sign of the welfare queen, entitled drain on the budget and lazy to boot. In other words, barriers to improving public services. Women trade unionists, especially teachers and nurses, have countered this assault by organizing not only themselves, but also the people who depend on their services. As militant teachers have claimed, our working conditions are our students' learning conditions. The California Nurses Association organized a broad coalition to pass legislation mandating nurse-patient ratios in hospitals. Perhaps most unexpected, Domestic Workers United, an organization that began with nannies and house cleaners organizing in New York City, won not only a Domestic Workers Bill of Rights at the city level and then in the New York State Legislature, but encouraged the expansion and establishment of other domestic worker organizing projects. This national movement recently won a ruling from the federal government that, for the first time, domestic workers would be covered by federal laws regulating hours of work, health and safety, overtime pay, and the right to time off. Cutting across differences among teachers, nurses, and domestic workers, these projects share two central strategies. One, organizing in and beyond the workplace, and two, raising awareness of and support for the dignity and importance of caring work. They enact social solidarity, remind us of our interdependence, and defend social responsibility for care. In these ways, they represent a fundamental challenge to neoliberal ideals of entrepreneurship, individualism, and so-called self-sufficiency. Socialist feminist politics offers a unique perspective for organizing in the 21st century. Socialist feminists' commitment to self-organization supports organizational structures that are non-hierarchical and democratic and therefore more inclusive. Attention to intersectionality as a guide to both program and political discourse, the demands that movements make, and the language we use to support those demands, opens a ground on which deep social divisions might be overcome rather than reproduced. Understanding the ways that workplaces, households, and communities are interrelated leads to more effective modes of organizing and more possibilities for coalition politics, making connections among what are often seen as very different and separate issues and struggles. Socialist feminist visions of leadership and of leadership development promote activist capacities for engagement in democratic decision-making and collectivity. The recognition that affect, emotions, and sexuality are always present, shaping social relations, encourages activist self-reflection, empathy, and respect for different ways of being in the world. For the Well-Read Red, this has been Fran Michel, reading from the work of Johanna Brenner.
I wish I was a stone in the rain.
Good morning, listeners to the Old Mole Variety Show. My name is Liz. I'm a volunteer here at KABU, and I'm here with the indomitable Ani. Say good morning, Ani.
Good morning.
And we're here to interrupt this fantastic program for just a few minutes to ask you to help support it with your financial contributions. And you can do that by calling
877-500-5266. It is your support that keeps KABU on the air. We are grassroots community radio, and you are the grassroots. You are the community that we are here to serve. 877-500-5266 is the number to call so that you can make sure you are doing your part to keep us on the air and keep us independent so we are working together for a more just world. 877-500-5266.
And if a phone isn't convenient to your hand at the moment, you can go online at kboo.fm and click on the jar up in the upper right hand corner to help support us now. And when you fill out your form saying why you're supporting or what program you're listening to, be sure to mention the Old Mole Variety Show. This program has been on the air forever, and that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing, because they continuously bring us really fierce, hard left, strident reporting, strident in the best possible way about all kinds of things that you're not going to hear on any other radio station, and frankly, you're not going to find much on the web either. If you believe in this kind of programming, if you believe in the diversity of programming that KABU offers, now's the time to step up and show your support. Call 1-877-500-5266. Our telephone volunteers are standing by to take your call. There are a number of different ways you can become a member. You can either put it on your credit card or your debit card. You can pay it all at once. You can come down here with a fistful of dollars and pay us in person, and we'll give you a tour around the station. Our address is 20 Southeast 8th, and we love it when people visit. We'd be happy to meet you and thank you in person and give you a tour of the station and show you exactly how your money is being put to use. But right now, we just need to hear from you. 1-877-500-5266 or kboo.fm.
It is just a moment out of your day to make sure that you are doing your part to keep KABU on the air, to keep KABU up and going, because you, in fact, are our sponsors. 83% of our funding comes directly from you, our listeners. You are, in fact, what keeps us going. You pay the bills. You keep that transmitter transmitting the signal. You are important to KABU. So right now, we need you to actually be there. Let us know that you care. Let us know that your dollars will keep that signal flowing, that you will do your part to make sure community radio keeps transmitting. 877-500-5266.
You are listening to the Old Mole Variety Hour on KBOO Portland. Thanks, Ani and Liz. Before that, we heard an excerpt from Joe Walsh's version of Mole in the Ground. I rather like those lyrics. Up next, we are going to turn to Bill Resnick, who is talking with Arun Gupta, who will be speaking at Portland State University with Johanna Brenner this Wednesday. They talk about an article he wrote for the Socialist Register called The Walmart Working Class.
Arun Gupta, welcome to KABU. Great to be here with you today, Bill.
Arun Gupta co-founded the Occupied Wall Street Journal, also the Radical New York City and national paper, the Independent he co-founded. He writes a lot for The Guardian, for In These Times, other left journals. He recently published in the Socialist Register. It's a yearly book of wonderful essays. Its publishers offered copies to folks in the Portland area and anywhere else on earth who become members of and renew at KBOO. In the Socialist Register, Arun Gupta published an article. It's called The Walmart Working Class. So, Arun, tell us about the difficulties of the Walmart working class in organizing and struggling and fighting back, and also that unions face in helping people organize and pressure that mega company.
Well, it comes down to a few factors. First of all, Walmart historically built its model on wage theft. From the very beginning, Sam Walton used legal maneuvers to steal wages from employees. And as part of that, Walmart's history is also in the Ozarks, which is a region with very, very low union density. And so they didn't have to contend with any sort of real unionization campaigns for years. But when they did, first with the truck drivers, they were extremely hostile to unions and have been ever since. And Walmart is really set the model for what's called union avoidance. But, you know, that sounds something like it's an STD. Let's call it what it is, union busting. And so they've done things like in Canada, when a store unionized, they shut down the whole store. In the U.S., when a few butchers unionized a shop in Walmart store in Texas, they got rid of butchers throughout the whole company. So what they want is a workforce that is precarious, you know, that is essentially part-time, very few rights or benefits, that is constantly living in fear of standing up to the boss. And they very much game the political system is part of this. And their rise also happened to coincide with historical trends, such as the attack on unions by the right, the whole Reagan era rollback of union power, and even before that. Then on the flip side, you also have an organized labor movement that really has lost its way. And so I think, you know, there are lots of great people. There are lots of people who are trying very hard within various unions. I think there are a lot of unions that are doing great work. But at the same time, if we look at the big picture at a national level, unions are institutions. And so many labor leaders, especially of the really big unions, are just interested more in institutional survival and reproduction than they are in organizing the working class. You know, and we can understand unions as basically a tool of working class politics, but they are not necessarily working class organs.
Even if the unions, even the best of the unions and the ones that really have a critical edge and put resources into organizing and are not threatened by, in fact, independent action from the shop floor that might, in fact, generate the new group of leaders. They're not, a lot of them are not interested in building leadership, actually. But even in the unions that really are democratic and have shop floor power and nurture it, it seems to me it's still a really hard road to hoe to organize people so low paid, so intimidated, so frightened, and so needy of trying to, in their daily lives, develop some sorts of skills or a resume or get a credential or go to college or something or sell drugs, whatever it is, to augment your income, where people really are near the edge and where the unions don't have too much to offer them in the current period, except maybe for being laid off.
Well, that's all part of the Walmart economy, is to keep people on the edge, to keep them unstable, because if you're constantly worried about, can I pay the electric bill? Can I put a few gallons of gas in my tank? How am I going to pay the rent this month? You know, are we going to have enough food? You know, if that's what your daily concerns are, you're not thinking about how do I organize? How do I change my situation? Right. You're just consumed with trying to survive. You know, but at the same time, let's also not back off from appropriate criticisms of unions. You know, there's been huge opportunities the last few years in terms of this economic crisis. And estimates are hard to come by how much money unions have poured into the Democratic Party since 2008. It's certainly well into the hundreds of millions. It could be $1 billion. It could be $2 billion. No one is quite sure. And suppose they had taken just half that money and poured it into building a movement of the unemployed, of the long-term jobless. And there's a quick answer to that question. It's just like, why aren't unions organizing the unemployed? Because the unemployed don't pay dues. So, you know, this is why most unions are not really working class organs. It's a simple fact. We can take it as a criticism if we want, but that is just a simple fact that unions have institutional interests. They want to ensure that they continue to get their revenue year after year. And so many unions will often see the bosses as more of an ally than they do the working class. And in particular, from my reporting, I think the SEIU, Service Employees International Union, is more interested, at least parts of it, in working with corporations. Same with the United Auto Workers. You know, they are very cozy with the big three, more the steelworkers union. They have actually joined in anti-dumping lawsuits with U.S. steel producers against China. So they're not really representing workers' interests.
I think that's true, although it does seem to me from their point of view, they could argue, if I don't give money to the Democrats, the Republicans are really going to take over and completely destroy the union and not only end my pension, but end the pensions of a lot of older people and a lot of members who are only living on those pensions. I think they can justify it to themselves that way. Now,
well, anyone can justify anything to themselves.
Well, you know. But I think it's partly true. It's not a just completely, you know, rationalization.
Well, let's look at the actual record, though, since 2008, right? They poured an enormous amount of resources.
No, it's not effective. That's the problem.
Well, it's not just it's not effective. It's just like the Obama administration hasn't missed an opportunity to kick them in the face, right? You know, they forced a two-tier wage system with the United Auto Workers. They have actively attacked teachers' unions. That is a shame.
I mean, that's the most shame.
They did not pull any weight to get AFCA, the Employee Free Choice Act, passed. You know, of course, it was going to be a tough battle, but, you know, where did the Obama administration spend its capital? They spent it protecting the banks, protecting Wall Street. I mean, you know, you have probably the foremost financial journalist in America, Matt Taibbi, recently pointed out the Bush administration was harder on Wall Street than the Obama administration. And that's a thing to understand about the Democratic Party. They are part of the ruling class. And in fact, they are more effective than the Republicans because they get people to think that they are somehow for the working class.
This is KBOO Radio, 90.7 FM, Portland, Oregon. Bill Resnick for the Old Mole Variety Hour talking to Arun Gupta. We've been discussing the Walmart working class. That's the title of his lead article in the Socialist in the 2014 Socialist Register. It was a sobering discussion. So far, the conversation has focused on the terrible situations that most workers face, and more in the United States as that business model is adopted by more and more employers. There's another side of American life, though, and it seems to me, now you'll hear the Arun Gupta, who can eloquently describe the potentials, not for tomorrow, but for the next 30 years. Why do you remain hopeful?
I mean, you know, hope is very much part of the human spirit, of character, of history. Things can seemingly come out of nowhere. And, you know, like the anti-globalization movement, the global justice movement, whatever you call it, in 1999, the anti-Iraq war movement, the immigrants' right movement and the Dreamers, the Occupy Wall Street movement. After they happen, we can analyze the genealogy of how they came into being. But at the time, no one realized that they were going to blow up into these huge movements. And of course, there's also the global movement of the squares, you know, that we've seen over the last couple of years.
No one would have ever thought that gays and lesbian people could have been demanding the right to marry. When I grew up, it would have been inconceivable. That world could never have occurred. Yeah. And women, in fact, in the workforce, so many things, I mean, and being able to make the kinds of demands they make. Or many movements, the civil rights movement. No one could have been expected anything like that in the, even in the late 50s. People were still struggling. Suddenly it caught fire and the history changed the world and these movements developed. Yeah. It seems to me we can be hopeful, though, about a lot of things, even the Walmart working class.
I think one of the most hopeful things that's going on now is in Seattle with this 15 Now movement. It's really quite amazing that, first of all, that Shama Savant, an avowed socialist, was able to get elected to the Seattle City Council, but she has been relentlessly focused on one issue, and the party she's part of, Socialist Alternative, and the movement they are helping to lead, 15 Now. It's all about, we need to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour immediately. And on May 1st, ironically May Day, the Seattle Mayor Ed Murray announced that they were going to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour, or that there was a proposal that was going to be submitted to the city council. A grassroots movement has forced this onto the table. And she very much points to a few different factors that made it possible. The Occupy Wall Street movement, the organizing of fast food workers around the country for the $15 an hour minimum wage, as well as the ballot initiative that happened in SeaTac for a $15 minimum wage that was passed.
Which is really caught on amongst all of those 20-somethings who are working as baristas. I mean, that movement, it seems to me, has really inspired vast numbers of precarious working people. Right. At every level.
We need to understand that for the large majority of workers, precarity, the idea that you have this highly unstable work, this is something new. There have always been segments of the working class where that was true, especially for, say, like African Americans or Latinos, many women as well. That has always been true, but now it is very much becoming the norm. But one of the editors of the Socialist Register, who's really one of the great labor historians and thinkers, Sam Gindin, has pointed out, it's just like, look, good-paying industrial jobs did not just happen. Those were the service sector jobs of their day. They paid horribly. There were few rights or benefits. Those all had to be fought for. So when we talk about the low-paid service sector jobs today, there is no inevitability about that. They can be paid much better than they are. And in fact, there have been calculations that have been done that Walmart can easily double the pay of its workers, and it would still be enormously wealthy. McDonald's could double the pay of everyone in its corporation, including its already fabulously wealthy CEO, and would only need to raise the price of a Big Mac by 68 cents. This is what it gets down to.
It's a wealthy world. In fact, if it was shared even remotely equitably, you could imagine very different kinds of civilizations and people would live.
Of course, we found trillions to bail out banks, and it would actually take far less than that to make an equitable world. It was great to be on the Old Mole Variety Hour.
You are tuned to KBOO Portland, listening to the Old Mole Variety Hour. Before we go back to Ani and Liz, I want to turn it over to Arun Gupta to speak a bit about why you should support community radio.
I just want to say it's great to be on KBOO. I've been a regular guest here. I've traveled all across the United States in the last 3 years, been in 50 different cities, and I can tell you radio stations, media outlets like KBOO are an absolute gem. They are incredibly vital to helping sustain and build movements, to giving people ideas as forums for discussion and debate, and creating a real community, a real alternative, something that we're the seeds of a different society can grow from. So it's really important that we do whatever we can to support KBOO, whether that means giving $5, $50, or $500. It takes everyone doing whatever they can. So please donate and support KBOO generously.
And you can do that right now by calling 877-500-5266. We thank Arun Gupta for making his time available this morning to talk to Bill Resnick, and for his heartfelt pitch there for KBOO, your community radio station. 877-500-5266. That is the number to call. I'm Ani. I'm here with Liz. And we are enticing you to become members of KBOO Community Radio this morning. You heard Arun Gupta just say that traveling around this country, he has noticed that it is a rare and really precious resource, community radio, independent media like KBOO. It is so important that you support this organization. media right now, so that we can continue bringing you relevant programming to keep us together and inspired for active social change work. Right now, if you call with your membership, your pledge of support for $60 or more, you can ask for a copy of this book, The Socialist Register 2014. And it is, a collection of essays looking at economic issues from really around the world through a socialist lens. But right now you are hearing, well, you have just heard Bill talk with Arun Gupta, and he has written the lead article, The Walmart Working Class. And so if you would like more of that and more conversation to spread around your community, please give us a call at 877-500-5266. Or you can also donate online at kboo.fm.
That's right. And this book, The Socialist Register 2014, includes the article that Arun Gupta was just discussing called The Walmart Working Class. But it has a number of other really interesting and hard-hitting discussions of working class peoples and their fights for income equality all over the world. Again, this is not going to be the kind of thing you're going to find in mainstream media or even in other public media outlets in Portland or around the country or even online. This kind of perspective is something you're really only going to find here in Portland on KBOO. We know you value this kind of programming because you're listening to it right now. Show your support, not just by listening, but by taking that next step to becoming a member. Pick up the phone, call 877-500-5266, or again, go online to kboo.fm. Let us know that you value this programming with your support. And once again, you can pick up a copy of that book, The Socialist Register, for just $60. That's an amazing value, you know. And books are great because once you read them, you can pass them on to friends, and they can pass them on to friends. And the power of that, of the ideas in this book, just like the power of the ideas you hear on KBOO, can ripple out through the community. So think about all the good that you do by showing your support right now, getting the book, sharing it with friends, and spreading the socialist word wherever you go. 877-500-5266. Ani?
It's very true. You have pretty much said it all right there, Liz.
Sorry, I didn't leave you anything left, did I?
But it's basic, it's true, and it's important that we hear from you right now. It is, in fact, how, you know, listeners to The Old Mole, I know you thirst for social justice. This is why you listen to The Old Mole. The Old Mole lays it out for you every week, bringing you a really good analysis of socioeconomic perspectives. Also, I have to say, an anti-oppression lens, looking at how racism and sexism always interplay with socioeconomics. It is a very important program here in the KBOO Broadcast Week. And I know that Old Mole listeners are passionate about social change. I know that you really do give a damn to make this world a better place. And right now, what we need you to do is a little checkbook activism. Support those values that you know that you share with KBOO and with The Old Mole, those values of justice and peace and democracy, those values of human rights, those values of environmentalism and multiculturalism.
And basic fairness.
You know, that. please do give us a call right now and say, yeah, you're backing those values that KBOO promotes, that you share. You are backing it with a little of your hard-earned money. 877-500-5266. We are looking to raise $500 this morning during the Old Mole Variety Hour. With your help, it's possible. And in fact, with your help, it is the only way forward. Please do take this moment to step up and become a new member of KBOO today. If you've been listening for a while and you have not yet taken it upon yourself to say, yeah, KBOO is your station, Take that moment right now and say yes to community radio, KBOO, 877-500-5266.
As Ani mentioned, we are trying to raise $500. We have half an hour left to do it, and we are a little shy of our goal. $500 is a lot of money. We're not asking any one person to pony up that much. We could have maybe five people call in at the $100 level. If that's a little above your pay grade at the moment, how about 10 of you at the $50 level? Or some number in between. if you became a member at the $60 level, for example, that's just 16 cents a day. What else can you say you buy for 16 cents a day that gives you the kind of value that KBOO gives you? Think about it. We're going to be going back to the program in just a moment, but take a moment right now so you don't miss any of the Old Mole and call us 877-500-5266. Again, online, KBOO.FM. Thanks so much.
You are listening to the Old Mole Variety Hour. I'm Joe Clement, your host. Well, when Margaret Thatcher died about a year ago, many on the left took the opportunity to use her life and biography as something of a template for the story of the ascension of right-wing neoliberalism, in the UK at least. But it was not long before the world-famous contrarian philosopher Slavoj Žižek would uphold her in a New Statesman article as an exemplar of the kind of decisive political will we need if we are going to overcome capitalism. Gabriel Levi, writing for his own blog, People in Nature, offers a very thoughtful response that I want to share today for the way that it defends participatory democracy. Levi writes that Žižek, regarded as a leading left intellectual, explains his point about how we need a Thatcher on the left with reference to Winston Churchill's approach to military decisions. Boil down the expert's analysis into a simple yes or no. Such a gesture, which can never be fully grounded in reasons, is that of a master, Žižek writes. The master is needed, especially in situations of deep crisis. Thatcher was such a master, sticking to her decision, which was at first perceived as crazy, gradually elevating her singular madness into an accepted norm. In passing, I'd argue that this is an idealized, one-sided portrayal of Thatcher. Yes, she was more ideological and dogmatic than other Tory leaders, but she didn't fight all her battles at once. Even if she talked about them, yes, she laid waste to British industry and sought revenge on enemies without in Argentina and within with the miners. But for all her ranting about curbing the state, budget expenditure grew year after year and she postponed most privatizations. But Žižek's main point is not about Thatcher. It is that we need someone on the left who can, quote, repeat Thatcher's gesture in the opposite direction, end quote. He counterposes such a master to active participatory democracy, which he distrusts, but which I think is socialism's heart and soul. The demands and democratic aspirations of popular protests around Europe, quote, form a kind of epistemological obstacle to the proper confrontation with the ongoing crisis of our political system, Žižek argues. But the worst thing of all, he writes, is any notion of direct, that is, participatory and active as opposed to parliamentary democracy. The, quote, myth of non-representative direct self-organization is the last trap, the deepest illusion that is the most difficult to renounce, end quote. But renounce it we must. Žižek doesn't unpack what he means by leadership. To my mind, many qualities that word might imply are not only necessary for the success of any movement of social transformation, but are also inconceivable without a development of direct participatory democracy. They include decisiveness and initiative, without which no group of demonstrators ever broke through a line of police or soldiers, and no group of activists ever convinced their workmates to strike. It involves strategic thinking, without which large-scale, long-term struggles and transformations are inconceivable. And it also includes the ability to theorize, without which no movement can prosper. Why would such qualities have to be brought together in one strong leader? And how to resist the danger of which the history of all 20th century revolutions provides depressing evidence of leaders becoming authorities and worse? Žižek doesn't say. Neither does he try to refute the generations of communists, from the Levellers to the Charterists, to Karl Marx, Friedrich Engels, and William Morris, and to many more in the 20th and 21st centuries, who have seen as the motive force of change the working class and wider sections of society downtrodden under capitalism. Žižek gives two reasons for needing a master. First, while there can be, quote, ecstatic moments of group solidarity, end quote, during revolutions, they don't last. Quote, the large majority, me included, Žižek writes, wants to be passive and rely on an efficient state apparatus to guarantee the smooth running of the entire social edifice so that I can pursue my work in peace, end quote. Well, millions of people who do meaningless, dispiriting, uncreative things to earn a living might not want to, quote-unquote, pursue their work in peace in a way that, say, a university-based professor can. It's presumptuous for Žižek to speak on their behalf. And as for wanting an efficient state apparatus to guarantee the smooth running of the entire social edifice, I don't see what is left-wing or radical about that. To my understanding, socialism is about superseding the state. Žižek's second argument is that the master is important as a counterweight to our quote-unquote democratic sensitivity. Quoting Alain Badiou, Žižek argues that to transcend illusions in representative, that is, parliamentary democracy, quote, appeals to direct self-organization are not enough. A new figure of the master is needed, end quote. But it's an old, old argument. People are incapable of taking decisions and implementing them collectively. They need someone to do it for them. Socialism from above, which overlaps with such big leader syndrome, has been battling against socialism from below since the early 19th century, or even since classical times, depending on how you want to count. Then Levi concludes, Slavoj Žižek might want a Thatcher of the left, but he surely doesn't want to be one. I reckon his popularity, at least in the universities, is not a matter of big leader syndrome, but of big thinker syndrome, the left looking for someone to do its thinking for it. To my mind, this shows the huge distance we still collectively have to travel in order to develop truly emancipatory ideas. A collective effort is needed to renew for the 21st century fundamental aspects of socialist thinking, including our understanding of the relationship between socialism and feminism, of hierarchy, political authority, and the state in the aftermath of Stalinism, of work, technology, the labor process, and the transition beyond capitalism, not to mention the relationship between humanity and its natural environment and how that might involve in such a transition. Well, you are listening to the Old Mole Variety Hour. I was just reading excerpts from an article that Gabriel Levi wrote about a year ago called We Need Žižek's Thatcher of the Left Like a Fish Needs a Bicycle. Gabriel Levi maintains their own website at peopleandnature.wordpress.com. The renaissance of socialist thinking that Levi is calling for is exactly the work that the Old Mole sets out to do. But participatory democracy isn't just a nice idea. It's activity. It's what we do, and it's what we do at the Old Mole through KABU. It's places like KABU that help support us in the good fight, not just on air, but when we go back out into the community and try to change the world.
That's right, Joe. And you can change the world right now by calling 877-500-5266 or go online to kboo.fm and become a member right now to support the Old Mole Variety Show and all of the other amazing, diverse, eclectic, unusual, off the charts, offbeat, marginalized, other than normal, other than mainstream programming that you hear on KABU 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We bring this kind of programming to you because we believe in its importance. The people who put these programs together spend a lot of time and a lot of effort to bring you this information and to bring you the wide variety of music that we play. And nobody that you hear on the air at KABU is paid for their time. Every voice you hear on the air is that of a volunteer. We have a very tiny, very, very hardworking paid staff, but everybody you hear on it otherwise at KABU is a volunteer. That includes our board operators, any voice you hear on the air. 83% of our donations come directly from individual listeners just like you. And so now is the time for individual listeners just like you to pick up that phone and call 877-500-5266. Now is the time to show your support for the Old Mole. Now is the time to show your support for KABU. Now is the time to take that step up from being just a listener to really becoming a community radio supporter. Now's the time. Don't wait another minute. Ani?
This is that moment. 877-500-5266. Don't put it off or procrastinate. You know, social action, social change, social action towards social change, it needs you. It needs participation. And we are asking you to participate this morning by supporting independent media, independent radio, that is KBOO, because in fact, we are that station that supports so many causes, so many movements, the free flowing of information to spark ideas, to spark conversation so that we can find our answers together and we can go forward making this world a better place. 877-500-5266
is the number to call. You can set up a monthly deduction from your checking account so that we can know that your support comes in all year round, and you can actually contribute a really significant amount by the end of a year. And it's just in simple bite-sized pieces. Go ahead and consider giving 1 hour's wage every month. It's the option I take. It's the option many of my friends take. And right now I'm asking you to consider giving that 1 hour's wage every month to your community to provide a firm foundation for the free exchange of ideas, for ideas that broaden the public discourse, for ideas that make a difference to your community. 877-500-5266 is the number to call, or you can join us online at kboo.fm. Either of those options will work just fine. Just make sure that we hear from you now. Please give us a call, 877-500-5266.
You are listening to the Old Mole Variety Hour on KBOO Portland. Well, if you've read the news lately, you may have heard that Paul Robeson Jr., the son of the famous communist singer, has died, and he led a life of activism himself. Lori Mercier is here to talk about both Paul Robeson Sr. and Jr. with a bit of a musical clip. Lori.
Writer, archivist, and activist Paul Robeson Jr. died last week at age 86 after spending four decades preserving the legacy of his father, the actor, singer, and civil rights advocate. After Paul Robeson Sr.'s death in 1976, his son worked to establish the Paul Robeson Archive and the Paul Robeson Foundation. The archive, housed at Howard University, is the largest repository of Robeson documents and articles, totaling well over 50,000 items, and keeping alive the radical voice of the singer. Robeson's Jr.'s life reflects the work of countless and often invisible archivists who have often volunteered their labor to save the writings, performances, and memories of forgotten radicals, or in the case of the online National Security Archive, spent countless hours patiently filing Freedom of Information Act requests to uncover secret government efforts to silence dissenters like Robeson. At the peak of his popularity in the mid-1940s, Paul Robeson was the most famous black man in the world, yet within a decade during the Cold War, he was virtually erased from historic memory. In a coordinated effort by the FBI, U.S. State Department, and congressional and state investigating committees, Robeson was barred from performing, and in 1950, his U.S. passport was revoked when he refused to sign an affidavit that he was not a communist, although he never officially joined the party. During those years, no major concert hall, stadium, or amphitheater would sponsor a Paul Robeson concert. However, in a symbolic act of defiance against the travel ban, in 1952, the left-leaning International Union of Mine, Mill, and Smelter Workers of British Columbia organized a concert at the International Peace Arch on the border between Washington State and Canada. It became one of the largest events in Pacific Northwest history, popularly remembered as the Woodstock of the labor movement. Robeson returned to perform at the Peace Arch for the next three summers. Refusing to be silenced, there he explained his appreciation for the Soviet Union as the world's great counterbalance to the West's pernicious capitalism, imperialism, colonialism, and racism. Robeson's admiration for the Soviets had begun in the 1930s when he had taken his son, Paul Robeson Jr., to Moscow to study and escape the racist U.S. educational system. Paul Robeson Jr. later trained as an electrical engineer and translator of Russian language scientific journals and began to emulate his father's activism. In a 1993 interview, he said, "I follow in my father's cultural tradition, and like him, I am a black radical." Robeson maintained on many occasions that his father never joined the Communist Party, or any party for that matter. He was an independent artist and would never submit to any kind of organizational discipline. On his own politics, he stated, "I was much more an organized political person," adding that from about 1948 to 1962, he was a member of the Communist Party. It was an instrument, he said, a radical instrument that could help advance the interests of African Americans. It helped build the early civil rights movement and independent trade union movement in the 1930s, 40s, and 50s. And like his father, Paul Robeson Jr. found it difficult to find work because he stayed true to his political principles. He noted, "I was unemployable because I was black and radical." In addition to his activism, Paul Robeson Jr. wrote and spoke extensively about his father's life and the state of black America. He believed that other biographers missed key elements of the famous radical singer's politics. And he was also a critical analyst of the politics of multiculturalism and the radical and utopian potential of African American culture, best represented by his 2006 book, The Black Way of Seeing. Here is Paul Robeson Jr. speaking at the Dialogue with the Diaspora Conference in London, where he emphasizes the need for a radical reconstruction of society, invoking the more radical Martin Luther King Jr.'s vision for economic justice.
Civil rights cover only political rights. Human rights cover economic and cultural rights, as well as political rights. The latter-day Martin Luther King Jr. of 1967-1968 embodied the transition from the civil rights movement to the struggle for human rights and equal opportunity. That's why he was assassinated and why his true legacy has been drowned in a sea of iconography and nostalgia. A yardstick against which to measure today's black leadership can be found in his words spoken more than three decades ago. The black revolution is more than a struggle for the rights of Negroes. It reveals systemic flaws and suggests that the radical reconstruction of society itself is the real issue. We're dealing with the problem of the gulf between the haves and the have-nots. Amen.
Paul Robeson Jr., who died April 26th, labored to reinsert the radical legacy of his father's music, who is now probably best remembered for his rendition of the 1930s song, "I Dreamed I Saw Joe Hill Last Night," about the industrial workers of the world organizer and artist executed in 1915, whose commitments and ideals for justice could never die.
The copper bosses killed you, Joe. They shot you, Joe, says I. Takes more than guns to kill a man, says Joe. I didn't die, says Joe. I didn't And standing there as big as life and smiling with his eyes, says Joe, what they can never kill, went on to organize, went on to organize. From San Diego up to Maine, in every mine and mill, where workers strike and organize, it's there you'll find Joe Hill. It's there you'll find Joe Hill.
You're listening to the Old Mole Variety Hour. That was Paul Robeson Sr. singing his iconic song, Joe Hill. We are going to turn it over to Ani and Liz here, but I want to go ahead and make some thank yous and tell you how to tune in to the Old Mole every week. Thank you to Ron Gupta and Bill Resnick for talking about the welfare working or the Walmart working class, to Fran Michelle for reading Joanna Brenner's piece on 21st century socialist feminism, and for bringing that piece onto the Old Mole, because you're going to be able to hear both of these two activists and scholars at Portland State University this Wednesday in Smith 238, the Smith Memorial Student Union, from 7 to 9 p.m. They'll be talking about organizing for winning movements in the 21st century. Thanks to Lori Mercier for giving us a very short but thoughtful synopsis of the significance of both Robesons. And you can tune into, oh, and thank you to Gabriel Levi for writing his thoughtful response to socialism, to the socialism from above that Slavoj Žižek tries to proffer. You can find us on the web at kboo.fm/Old Mole Variety Hour. In a day or two, this show will be posted with links to individual segments. You can listen to the Old Mole every week live, Mondays, 9 to 10 a.m. You are listening to KBOO Portland. I'm going to hand it over to Ani and Liz, who are going to tell you about why you need to support this wonderful station.
Thanks, Joe. And the first way, even before we tell you why you should support it, we're going to tell you how you should support it. And how you support it is by picking up your phone and calling 877-500-5266. That number is good anywhere in the continental U.S. It is toll-free. If you are not near a phone, you can go online anywhere on planet Earth and go to kboo.fm and become a member that way. And the reason it's important for you to do that is because this kind of programming doesn't exist without your financial support. It's that simple. And as Joe had a whole bunch of folks to thank, we have a whole bunch of folks that we'd like to thank, too, who became members or renewed their membership this past hour. Thanks to Bill from Southeast Portland, who renewed his membership. Thanks, Bill. Thanks to Clayton, who renewed his membership, also in Southeast Portland. Yay, Clayton. Thanks to Brooke, a new member in Northeast Portland. Thanks to Mary, who renewed her membership in Southeast. Thanks to Marie, who's renewing from Hood River. Let's hear it for Hood River. And thanks to Tom, who renewed his membership in Northeast Portland. Thanks to all of you. But, you know, we are still a little shy of our goal, and we still have some time for us to make that goal, our goal of $500. And the way you do that, again, is by picking up your phone and calling 1-877-500-5266 or go online, KBOO.fm. Ani, don't we have some restaurants to thank?
Indeed, 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 we do. We are
the thank yous
very,
just keep coming.
I was going to say, we are very thankful here at your community radio station, and we'd like to extend thanks to Voodoo Donuts at 22 Southwest 3rd Avenue, as well as the Observatory, 8115 Southeast Stark, and Pizza Fino, which is 8225 North Denver. We thank all of these restaurants for helping to support KBOO today, and we would love to thank you. We'd love to add your name to the good book of people who are actively promoting independent media in their community, people who are actively working towards a better world together. And whether you do that, you know, by actually giving of your time, coming in and conducting these interviews, doing audio production work, whether you do that by being an active member of your labor union, whether you do that by direct action, because as many people know, direct action gets the goods, right? However you do it, we ask that you also just take a moment and become a financial supporter of KBOO today. It's checkbook activism. It's effective activism.
It's debit card activism. It's credit card activism.
It helps to make sure our transmitter stays on and that you are a part of the flow of information going to your neighbors, going to yourself, going to your community, keeping us tied together and operating together, keeping us strong. 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm.
That's right. You know, and you might be wondering, well, really, does it matter my little contribution, my $60 a year, my $90 a year? It really, really does. You know why? Because over 80% of our funding comes directly from individuals, not from corporations, not from local businesses, although we do get a little local business funding, which we are very grateful for. And of course, as most of you probably already know, we receive no government funding of any kind, no state funding, no city funding, no federal funding. It comes really from people just like you. If you're having a late breakfast, if you're at work, if you're cycling around town, people just like you are the main brace and support of this radio station. And we need to hear from you right now. 877-500-5266. We're so close to that goal. Help us make our goal by 10 o'clock. You can do that as easily as a $60 membership. That's just $5 a month. We can set that up for for you with an electronic funds transfer. That way it becomes a sustaining kind of membership. We don't have to send you a bill and you don't have to remember to pay us. It all works really, really well. It's safe, it's secure, and our phone volunteers are waiting to talk you all the way through it. If that doesn't work for you, you can write us a check. You can bring in a fistful of cash and meet us in person, which we would love to have you do. Our address is 20 Southeast 8th, just between Burnside and Ankeny. You can put your membership on a credit card. There are any number of ways that you can become a member. We're trying to make it as convenient and painless for you as possible, but your first step starts with you by picking up that phone, 877-500-5266, or go online, kboo.fm. Keep this kind of programming on the air. This program, the Old Mole Variety Hour, and the programs coming up like Locus Focus, and all of the amazing and diverse and eclectic music that we play throughout the afternoons and weekends. Take a moment right now and show that that this kind of programming matters to you, the kind of unique programming you're never going to hear on any other radio station in Portland. 877-500-5266.
Ani? You know, Liz, you were saying that it's people just like you, dear listener, that keeps us on the air. And I've got to say, there's no one exactly like you. It's time for you. You to step up and do your part, because you can't just wait for that person over there that might share some of your thoughts and might share some of your values. You can't just wait for that person over there and think that, you know, no one's really going to notice if you do it or you don't do it, because really, what difference does it make? It makes a huge amount of difference. Your participation is really what counts. You are the only person that can take responsibility for yourself in right action and right livelihood, right? And so it is important that you go ahead and add your own energy, your own participation into that community resource that is KABU. 877-500-5266. The average contribution that members contribute in a year is about $90. If you are able to contribute $90, that's grand. Please do give us a call at 877-500-5266 and say, yeah, you'd like to contribute $90. It works out to a quarter a day, just a quarter a day, a couple dimes and a nickel every day. And that keeps KABU going strong. We would love to add you to this list of contributors. We would love to welcome you to the KABU family. Give us a call and let us know that you are there and that you share in the values that the Old Mole promote, that you value what they deliver every week in terms of analysis, commentary, news, information, and interviews, not to mention attitude. And that is, I have to say, well worth your support. KBOO.FM if you'd like to join us online, or contribute by phone right now by dialing 877-500-5266.
And you are tuned to KBOO in Portland. Air Cascadia is off today. Instead, we'll hear a piece on how America's middle class is declining as counterparts in Europe and Canada are advancing. And that will be followed at 10:15 by Locus Focus with host Barbara Bernstein. She interviews writer Elizabeth Colbert, who has a new book, The Sixth Extinction, An Unnatural History. Stay tuned at 11 for Health Watch with host David Naiman. He speaks with best-selling author and renowned herbalist Rosemary Gladstar about 21 herbs proven to be effective at soothing and even preventing stress symptoms. And at 11:30 on Madness Radio, B. Nev Jones, psychiatric anthropology